When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Over, but we are just getting started celebrating it here on Post Show Recaps. That's right. It is the 2023 in review podcast series where all month long PSR is looking back one last time on some of the very best shows of the year. You can check out the full series by subscribing at postshowrecaps.com/2023in review. I'm Jess Sterling. Today, we're talking about Succession Season 4, the impact it had on television in 2023, and so much more. Of course, I'm joined by my fellow Greglets, because you cannot make a Tomlet without breaking some Gregs, Grace Leader and Dr. Amanda. Grace, how you doing?
I'm good. I love you, but you're not serious people, Jess.
The amount of times I've been told that in my life.
Just kidding.
I am serious about my love of Succession, as is Dr. Amanda. Yeah. Amanda, how are you?
I'm great. So I think I figured it out, Grace and Jess. So if the election's on Tuesday and the markets open on Monday and the funeral was on a Saturday, then I think that the finale, it was 10 days, I think. I've been working on this since our last podcast. I think I figured out the timeline.
Best part of this is that we're recording this early. So today is yesterday or tomorrow is today or something, according to the podcast listeners, too.
Oh,
so,
no. Yeah. So
it's even, the timeline is even more confusing, is what we're saying.
The most important thing that happened on Succession Season 4 was figuring out what day of the week every episode took place.
I wish we could actually track the amount of time we theorized on that, actually. Until Rob was like, I don't think it matters. And everyone's like, that's right. I don't think it matters. It doesn't matter anymore.
No. And then Jesse Armstrong was like, yeah, we didn't even really know. We didn't even think of that.
Well, before we start talking too much about Succession, we want to remind you that at the end of the month, we're going to be revealing the top 10 TV shows of 2023, as voted on by the audience of PSR. So make sure your voice is heard. Head on over to postshowrecaps.com/best of 2023 to cast your vote. Of course, we'll also have it linked in our show notes. And tune in on Friday, December 29th to hear what shows made the list and which ultimately emerged victorious. Of course, if you've listened to me for 10 seconds on pretty much any podcast I've ever been on, you know Succession's going to be on my list. That's why we're here talking about it. It's incredible.
If you're listening to this podcast and you don't have Succession on your list, do you understand how mad Jess is going to be at you?
I'm so mad at you.
Don't let that happen.
I feel like my Succession has become such like a tent pole of television that I feel like every podcast I'm on is like, actually, do you know how this one is like Succession?
That's my entire personality, Grace.
Yeah, as if it's like the first television show that ever existed. I'm like, this is a lot like Succession, you know? And rewatching a show from 2005.
So much about Succession.
I think it's a really good point, Grace. I do feel like the Sopranos is another one of my favorite shows. And I feel like that was the benchmark for what prestige TV was like.
I think
a show.
One snuck in the middle, and I might be biased, but I think Breaking Bad had the Bill Simmons likes to do this thing of like who holds the championship belt, and it's basically just like who's the top at the top. And I do feel like Breaking Bad, I think, took it from Sopranos, and now I think Succession has wrangled it away from Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is like definitively, unequivocally true that there wasn't a show since Breaking Bad that I think like entered the conversation about huge hits that were extremely well written and well executed. So like the fact that Succession, I think, rose to that threshold at a time where we have been completely saturated with these prestige TV television shows is just like a complete boon to how fantastic of a show it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it goes to show how incredible it is that in my opinion, like season three was, we had COVID, we had one less episode. Like there was a lot going on. It was a little bit of a, in my opinion, a little bit of a valley for the show.
Kendall's birthday, if you will.
Yes, there was. We did have Kendall's birthday. Mm-hmm. And then season four just came back and it was so, so strong. And I feel like because we were at a point where Jesse Armstrong made the decision to end the show, you know, I think some people judged him for it. Some people wanted more, but I always appreciate when a creator and a writer is like, no, this is it. We're done. This is the story. Cause I mean, it's bold.
Does this feel relevant to the wider PSR RHAP universe about definitively ending?
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Yes. I just tweeted about this today that one of my beloved podcasts might be looking ahead to an end date. But yeah, I do think ultimately, like, you want as a creator to be in control of your timeline and to be able to craft.
He doesn't really know when the timeline is, but yes. No.
but like there is something to be said for that, like end on your terms instead of ending when, you know, the show is less popular or it's canceled or an actor or a character like needs to leave for some reason. I think that I really respect that Jesse Armstrong did it. And I do think especially with the conceit of Succession being a show about naming a successor, if the show didn't make good on that in some kind of definitive way, it would end up feeling like a tease.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think there's two pieces of this that really cement Succession as such a water cooler television moment, not of just this year, but like in the history of television. I know that sounds like super hyperbolic, mm-hmm. but I do think putting an end date, there's this theory at summer camp, I was a summer camp director, of you should not end your, you know, you might have the best activity ever for the kids and you should not end it when they are bored of it. You should end mm-hmm. it when they are most enjoying it, because then the next time you're like, you want to play that activity again, they will be very excited instead of their last memory being mm-hmm. how bored they are of it. And so I feel like, you know, I agree with it that, he gets to sort of, the risk is that it's really hard to end a show. And mm-hmm. so, I feel like he does successfully do that. But there was a risk in saying like, okay, this is it. And you do potentially lose out on money. I think that mm-hmm. from a market, market perspective, there was a risk to ending this show and a cost to Jesse Armstrong. But I feel like we all agree that it paid off. And the counter argument to he'll lose money or whatever is like, actually he created a sensation. He created mm-hmm. the idea that this is the final season of the show and it's must watch. And that's the other piece to this. I do feel like as the rise of streaming has happened, you know, I was sort of applauding HBO for half the year for being like the only television network that I thought like got it. And I will admit I'm fully over the, like, should it be streaming? Like, I don't know. Netflix is now doing like basically every premiere show they have is getting like a double drop. Like The Crown did it. I think Bridgerton is just announced.
You is going to have it soon.
You is again. Happening.
You is
Strangers,
happening.
Me is happening.
Strange sentence.
Stranger Things had it as well. Like, but I'm like, I don't know. They like, you know, us being like, drop your show weekly is not actually going, like, maybe in the long run it will work, but like, I don't think they have their models and they do it. So yeah. I just appreciate the networks that do, which is like HBO for half the year was like, let's just do Succession and The Last of Us and House of the Dragon and White Lotus. I think that was mm-hmm. last year, but like,
that was last year, yeah.
Yeah, but like, they just had this run of like, you tuned into Sunday night. And Succession, I think, is sort of the peak of that, certainly this year. And so you get both things. It was like, it's okay, it's ending. And people tuned in on Sunday nights. And it was like, it was Succession Day on Sunday, every day mm-hmm. on Twitter. And it was so fun. And so it both like captured the cultural zeitgeist. And the other part too is like, I just thought it was incredibly well-made television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with you, Grace, that like, obviously we're very biased in that it's easier as a podcaster to discuss a show when it's dropping weekly versus dropping in a binge. I think when it drops all at once, it always brings up the question of how do we cover this? And are we talking about every episode? And you feel like you're missing out on the conversation. Whereas I never felt more tuned into Succession than I did in season four, because we were able to podcast about it right after it aired. And you get these like live reactions, not just from your fellow podcasters, but from an audience of people who want to chat about the episode of television they just watched. It's incredible. And I think like obviously we've lost a little bit of that with the way streaming services operate now, but it really was impactful for this specific show, Amanda, because we had the arguments of, was it a cross out or an underline?
I still bring that up on a regular basis.
I've seen people get a tattoo of like with the line. What? It's kind of brilliant, to be honest. Yes. Because
it's obviously a cross out. I'm pretty sure Jess is team underline.
I'm team underline because it starts out as an underline, and that's the intent, is the beginning of the word.
He's a frail old man. I thought I would never get mad about cross and underline ever again.
But this is what I'm saying. Like, the show prompts this kind of hotly contested debate. You know, we were all there live chatting in our Patreon Discord, posterrecaps.com/Patreon if you want to join and chat with us about everything. But like, we were all live reacting to Logan's death scenes and like,
oh my goodness,
is this a joke, you know?
And, like, and not just the online like buzzing conversation, but there were fake obituaries about Logan Roy and like major newspapers. Like, it captured the cultural zeitgeist in a way that I think you can only do when you're releasing television week to week. And then, so, you know, reviewing the year of 2023, we had the series finale of Succession. We have HBO becomes Max. So HBO as such doesn't really exist anymore. We have the entertainment strikes. So we had this moratorium on new TV. And I do think that, like, because we're in this kind of retrospective nostalgic mood, that we're going to look at the finale of Succession as being the end of an era of television as it was, and really representing the high watermark and the beginning of the end of a certain kind of art form that, you know, that's been really dominant over the past 20 years.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've heard a lot about the strike, and I don't know that this is actually, we've seen any proof that this is true, but I think one of the, I think the unions made a lot of really great strides in terms of improving their union. But I think one of the fears coming out of the writer's strike in particular and the agreement that was made was that because there is this commitment to larger writer rooms, you can't just have this small group of people. There is a worry about, like, there'll be less TV. There will be just like less shows piloted. Again, I don't know that we know that that's true, because these companies have so much money that they could just make as much TV as they're making before and pay everybody that they are. But there's this fear about like less TV. And I do think there is this, the potential that as the strike happened, there is that that I think you're right, Amanda, that like there is a new era that will be ushered in, where maybe some of these things that for a while, like there has been this thing that I've been listening to on The Big Picture. And they talk about like, there's all these shows that came out over the last 5 years that like would have been movies before. Like Jeff Bridges made The Old Man, which was like a 7-episode like miniseries that like, that just would have been a movie before. We were talking about before we started about Love and Death, which is this.
Yeah.
Like, that can't, that feels like it could have been a movie. Like, it would have been a movie.
Lessons in Chemistry, I think, should have been a movie. Like, I do think I think that some of this culling of the television series, especially the streaming series, like, I don't think that Succession is is the show that's at risk. Like, I feel will be room for that kind of show. There might not be room for all the other dozens of prestige light, is like the kind of category that I'm calling it. But you know, this was a huge show that I think not only, you know, that not only existed on cable and streaming, but also like took advantage of the episodic format, took advantage of the multi-season arc. And again, we were like hailing that Jesse Armstrong decided to end it on his own terms when he did. This show really worked that when we're looking back on like this era of like excellent, you know, 10 episode series of television, like this feels like it nailed it. But you know, we're all very high on Succession, and I don't want to just be very Pollyanna-ish about 2023 in review. Now that we are several months after the finale, Grace and Jess, like, do you feel like the show stuck the landing?
I still feel like it is. I mean, the closest thing to a perfect show in my mind, I was very skeptical in the beginning of season four. I was one of the ones that was a little nervous they were ending it on a season four without doing a season five. I ultimately ended up very satisfied with it, and I was really happy with the way it ended. But I was a little skeptical in the beginning. I felt like I was also one of the more vocal objectors to the Shiv pregnancy storyline, because sometimes that can feel a little ham-fisted with, Sarah Snook, her real life pregnancy kind of being written into the show. But ultimately, I was so, so pleased with the ending. I was pleased that they killed Logan off three episodes in. That's a really mm-hmm. big move to make. He is the central figure in the show that everything kind of revolves around. He is the son. And to kill him off on the third episode is such a big move. But ultimately, first of all, the way they did it is absolutely incredible. And for me, the best episode of television of the year, if not the decade. It was a masterstroke in how to make intense, captivating television. I absolutely think it stuck the landing. I've gone back. I'm currently doing a rewatch because when am I literally rewatching Succession? Grace says with no, the most obvious
Wow. So surprising.
But yeah, Grace, what about you? I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, I'm actually most interested to hear from you, Amanda, because I feel like when we got on the deep dive and we talked about Kendall's ending in particular, I think you were not a fan of it. Is that right? So the piece that for me, actually, I have this very nitpicky thing about Kendall's ending that I wish it was reversed to a degree that I actually wish it was left more ambiguous than it was, which seems wild for a finale, but because I feel like the way that he looks at the water, then sits down, and then that's where we end, feels like in my read, yes, it's the end of that version of Kendall, but it doesn't feel like the end of Kendall. Mm-hmm. And so I still think a very well-written thing, but I sort of delight in the idea of the other way, that he goes and he sits down and then he would get up and he would walk, and then that's where you cut it, and mm-hmm. and it's more like that feels more like, and what I like about that is that I feel like you could then make the argument for whether or not he does or doesn't do anything in the way that it does happen. I don't feel like there's any read other than that he moves on with his life and something might happen to him later, but it does feel a little bit more I don't know, almost definitive in a way that what I think that this show did so well is spark conversation. I was actually just thinking about, as you were talking about, about the way that the show needed to fulfill its promise of name a successor. And I've been thinking, because as I've been looking at the results of the top 10s that have been coming in, I think shows that really resonate with us, and we did a whole episode on murder mysteries earlier this month.
And I'm so glad to hear that Jess seems to be doing okay.
I'm much better fun. Now. Thank you so much for your
time. It's really
nice. Just
Mike who passed away. But those shows resonate because they're so fun to talk about. And essentially podcasting, to bring it, some people might have folks that they can get, go into an office and this is the idea of the water cooler. Did you watch an episode last night? And podcasting gives people that outlet. It was what it was for me when I became part of this community, mostly at first through RHAP and being nobody I know watches Survivor. Maybe I can find people. And I find Rob Cesternino talking about it for more hours in the week than there are hours in the week, I think.
Yeah.
And so I just, that's what it gives us. The thing that I think is really interesting about Succession, and I don't mean to go back to this, what does it mean? What does it mean for? But the thing that I think is such a successful thing that shows will have to figure out how to emulate in their own style. Is this there's actually a mystery to the show.
Mm-hmm.
We are trying to solve as we're going along. And obviously it's not the same as who killed this person. It is who will succeed Logan Roy. And it created so much fodder for, did he cross it out or did he underline it? Why would he do that? And now is Kendall his favorite or is Kendall his least favorite? And does he think Kendall can do it? Mm-hmm. Does he want Kendall to do it? But he actually, he has to make Kendall into a person who's an awful human being to be able to do it. It created so much discussion. And then you could debate. You could be well, who do you think is going to be? Who do you think? And especially in that last season, okay, if they're going to tell, who's going to succeed him? Is it going to be Shiv? What if it was Tom? That's what this show was able to create by having a premise that in its essence is a bit of a mystery box, mm-hmm. not a mystery box show, but it asks one specific question that we don't know the answer to and we're trying to figure it out. It's really excellent that they can like drag us along that journey for four seasons, basically.
Yeah, those are the best shows to talk about because, like, you know, Succession really resonated on all of these like human and relational themes that we could discuss these relationships. But the fact that it had this momentum of there was a question that the show was going to answer and people could have different opinions. People could debate like, no, Shiv would be a better CEO than Roman would. And no, but Roman actually has this. And what does Logan want? Like we were all sort of engaged in the same guessing game that his children were. And I think that that like made the experience as a viewer really exciting and made the conversations around it really exciting. And I was like ultimately satisfied with the way the show answers the question of succession. But along the way, like we had all gotten so sort of absorbed in the Kendall Roy character that I needed to understand his ending. And like, actually, like the part of the whole post finale discourse that I really felt seen by was listening to Jeremy Strong and reading his interview specifically and what he felt about Kendall's ending. And that resonated more with what I felt as a viewer, that like Kendall essentially like could not go on, or that he would be kind of trapped in this internal scream forever, being like held hostage by Logan's best friend's name? Colin, like being held hostage by Colin as his protector and prison warren in this world where he's like never going to have ultimately what he wants. But like, I didn't feel like that was fully on the screen in the show. And I felt like I needed a lot of extra subtext to have that reading of the show. And I think it gets to like this whole question about finales in general. And there's been a lot of disappointment around finales, especially of really big shows, because it's hard. It's like hard to end something in a satisfying way. And there's a lot of virtue for the ambiguous finale because it allows for multiple interpretations. It's not a flat thing. It becomes this living thing that like gives the show additional life, because people can argue about like what happens in that final scene of The Sopranos. And like, we can still 20 years later, like have a debate about what happened in that scene, which gives the show an extra life. But I also think the ambiguous finale can be a little bit of a crutch.
And people hated The Sopranos finale.
They hated it.
It is very divisive. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think, I appreciate, to me, this is more of a, it meets in the middle, I would say, right? Because it's definitive in that, like, Tom is CEO, Logan is dead. But then there's also the question, the ambiguity comes in when you have, okay, Shiv and Tom, like, hold hands, but don't. And so what's going to happen with them, you know? And then you have Kendall, obviously, who has a little bit more of an ambiguous ending. And I think I appreciate the ambiguity, not necessarily because I want to have my own thoughts and feelings about like what these characters are doing, but because like life can be very ambiguous. And like, because this isn't any of these characters' deathbeds, you know, like they will live theoretically after the show ends. Like, I don't necessarily mind that we're left to question a little bit, because I don't think life is as easy as always like, this is exactly what is going to happen and that's the end all be all. But I agree. Finales are almost, you're always going to disappoint somebody with a finale. There's always going to be someone who wants Kendall to win and he doesn't, or wants
him
to
love the 6 feet under finale, by the way, because I'll tease that. Yeah.
Amanda, you were saying that you felt like the ambiguity is a crutch, and I just am intrigued to know.
Because I mean, it does. I do think it like solves it. It's a little bit of a cheap way to solve a lot of character arc problems, because it's like, okay, well, it's not this or that. You can imagine what it is. And like, I think that because with Succession, and like, yes, Succession is like much more of like a kind of like slice of life type of storytelling, where it's like, you know, where it, you know, we know Jesse Armstrong's thesis is that like people don't change. So we're not going to have this big, like dramatic change, but like in part because the question at the heart of the show is a question of succession. And because the show says, know a secret third thing. Like, it's like, it's not going to be any of the kids that you've been arguing about all this time. It's going to be Mattson, who we just introduced in the last season, and Tom, who's like a little bit of like a weak kind of puppet king anyway. Like, I do feel like it was like, well, what does this mean for the siblings who like literally have no other life, like aside from fighting for their parents' favor? And now that parent is gone. Like, it felt so tragic, and I needed the show to acknowledge that tragedy in a way that didn't feel like the season finale of every other season of Succession, which basically ended in the same place. Well, like, it's still not any of us, but maybe next time. Like, and, you know, like, maybe I'm being, like, overly harsh. I just recently heard on a different podcast Chappelle say, like, something disparaging about, like, the finale.
Yeah, he doesn't like it. Yeah.
And so, like, I do think that it's, as, like, podcasters who've talked about it, like, I want to acknowledge that I totally understand people's feelings. Like, I still think it was, like, a brilliantly written show. And I still think that there are good justifications for why they ended it the way they did. But like, for a show that like exceeded expectations, that punched above its weight in like every other way, I do think we can hold it to a pretty high standard for a finale. And like, I was looking at the list of the season 4 episodes and trying to highlight like which I think were the best. And the finale is definitely not on that list. So, I mean, like, that I think says something like about a show that's so great. It's like, this is your, like, this is your last salvo, like, what do you do with it? And I think it's a fair criticism to say like it wasn't Succession's best work.
Do you know LTW, like, what did Chappelle just say he didn't like it, or did he just like make a comment about it, or does he acknowledge why
How
he doesn't like it?
Fight
because
him?
I no yeah because I do think I have a theory about why people who don't like it don't like it. And I don't think it's an unfair take. And I think one of the pieces here is like, there is this so it's so interesting. We talked about like television and maybe the idea that, in, you know, moving forward, we're gonna have more things that might be made into movies rather than television. So just as an example, the Oscars pretty historically have loved a movie that ends in an uplifting note. And that's partially like the way that that award show is, like, the last thing they give out is the movie. And if you end, like, it's very actually rare, if you look, for them to end on a downer of a, like, it's something that doesn't have an uplifting thing. I think it's why Coda won a few years ago. Like, what a lovely little story that at the end of the night, everything ever all at once last year. Like, it's pretty, you know, for the most part, optimistic. And so these are the movies that resonate. And I don't think that's the same can be said of television. And I think that that's partially, there is something to be said that, like, the Emmys often do like separate their dramas and their comedies. And so drama gets this, like, you know, is more
so
serious.
A drama is 60 minutes and a comedy is 30 minutes. That's how they do
60
it.
Minutes is
so
new,
silly.
60
so
minutes
ridiculous.
is a news show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But
my point here is that, like, I think that there is a world where, like, this is an unsatisfying ending because people who look for escapism television, and I fell into this trap. Do you remember all season long? I mean, you'd be like, what is your hope for Ken? And I'd be like, I want him to be content, which is what I thought could be the happiest version of Kendall. And I fell into thinking, like, television, things should end happy. And not that they all do, but that there is this idea that when you're making art, I think it actually is hard, and it is a risk to say at the end of this, I'm going to say, actually, I was saying this the whole time. People don't change. Like, this man, Logan Roy, like, ruined his children. I can see that some people are like, that's not very fun.
It's unsatisfying, right? Like, people want better for the characters because the show is so well written and well acted that you get these truly horrifically awful people and you make us care about them. You know, how dare you make us love these characters that are just so awful and then make them have a terrible, terrible ending? And it's like, I guess I like that because to me that lives up to what Jesse Armstrong has always said, which is people don't change, right? Like, Kendall could have had what he wanted. He truly could have. He screwed it up. because of his ego.
No, the argument is that he actually can't. He actually literally cannot. That is Jesse Armstrong's.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, right, like, because he's always method. Yeah, because he's never going to change, because he's always going to screw it up for himself. His ego is always going to overtake things. He's going to get cocky, and that's when Shiv rips it out from underneath him. No, you cannot have this. If I can't have it, no one can. Sort of sibling mentality. And that's what I enjoyed about the finale. Not necessarily I'm like a Debbie Downer who wants things to end on a sad note, but it felt like it was written with the characters in mind. I've always like, in television, I just want consistency among my characters, and they can have growth arcs and journeys, and that's great. But if I feel like from season one to season four, a character is like completely different, they're not at all the way they were in the beginning, and it's not for any particularly good reason, that's where I struggle with television. And so to me, all of these characters acted as exactly as I would have expected them to, while the show is also kind of a little twisty-turny.
Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be sadder. I wanted, like, I actually wanted,
you wanted Kendall to leap over the fence.
I mean, I sound so mean, but yeah, I did. I wanted it to be sadder because I did feel like there was more of a finality to it, and I don't know if the show delivered it. I mean, like, you know, I just think it's interesting to talk about, because now for the first time in 2023, we have like the whole show to talk about. And like, this is a whole story that was told completely from beginning to end. I love that. I think that this is probably like, I don't know when we're going to get another Succession as our Sunday night water cooler show. We might not get something like this. I mean, like, I'm watching
There's one show that's out there that is not a Sunday night show, but I think has the potential to be the successor to Succession. And Dr. Amanda, you happen to podcast about it.
I podcast The Curse?
No, it's Severance.
Severance. That's right. Severance is coming back. So that would be great. Like, Severance coming back. And if Apple releases it the way that they did with season one, like, and if Severance, like, I was so upset in 2022 that Severance was going up against Succession season three.
Yes.
And that what was like, I thought, a great season of Succession, but not Succession's best work, was mopping the floor with Severance in every category. I thought that was really too bad. So, I mean, the one silver lining of Severance being shelved for so long with like a number of issues with producing season two, not the least of which is the entertainment strikes, is that now like Severance will be able to exist in its own space and stand up on its own two feet. So I'm very excited for that. I hope that Severance proves to be what Succession has
just
been.
Just for the Oscars to be like, actually, we really love House of the Dragon now. Unfortunately.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it will come up against that. But yeah, I mean, this was I don't want to be a Debbie Downer about Succession season four. I think it was
great. I think it's fair to be like, I don't think it's universally loved. I think it has a lot of love in our community. And I think to your point, like, you can hold it to a really, you know, high standard, because I think it can, I think in our opinion, it can pretty much meet it. Like, we set the highest possible standard.
It's one of, in my opinion, the five best television shows of all time, period. Right.
Yeah.
Full stop. All types of television shows, all of the time. It's one of the top five shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of its greatness, you brought it up as well, Amanda and Grace, but we should talk about the Emmy and Golden Globe nominations that it has, because it is, we're quickly approaching. It got rescheduled.
Not so quickly. We had to wait a while. We were approaching and then we slowed way down.
Yeah, but it's nominated for a lot. And I think, I know this happened, like you were saying, Amanda, in 2022, a lot of people were upset that Succession gets recognized so often in these categories, and to the point where it's a little comical. Every single category, everyone's going up against like three or four people from Succession. Mm-hmm. Like, it is pretty comical. Yeah. But there are so many people nominated.
Yeah. And there's a really big gripe I think you can make about one nomination in particular. So I think the actual thing, Amanda, here is, I think the thing you have felt about Severance is the way a lot of people are feeling about The Last of Us's chances going up against Succession, because they are paired against each other in a bunch of categories. And so I think that people are a little bit worried that Succession will steal basically everything from them. But it's up for Outstanding Drama Series. Three of the episodes are up for Directing, which is for America Decides, Connor's Wedding, and Living Plus, not the finale. Mm-hmm. Outstanding Lead Actor for Brian Cox, which I think is the big asterisk.
Yes.
Kieran Culkin.
You were in three episodes. I'm so sorry. Yeah. And you know I love the show, but this is where I will come in and be like, this is
And Jeremy
is ridiculous.
Strong is the other lead actor.
Sorry, yes, I interrupted you.
No, that's fine.
Is ridiculous to me. Like, I really, truly, like, I understand it's Brian Cox and he's Logan Roy. And, like, he is a central figure. And obviously anything and everything he does reverberates throughout the entire season. But if you were in three episodes,
I think we're forgetting that he appears on, actually, I guess he is only in three because he's barely in episode three. We only see
his dead body.
We do see him pre-commercial. Yes.
Yeah, we see him on the living in the Living Plus pitch. He's on the screen. Oh. I love it, though. I feel like it's the most Logan Roy move.
Yeah.
It's like,
course.
It's very, very like life imitating art. So I very much enjoy that. And honestly, like, get your bag, Brian Cox. I mean, it's like, I feel like he had like a relatively quiet career and then like becomes Logan Roy. And I love that he's like, you know, out there wearing his red boots and skinny jeans and like just like soaking up the sunshine. Do it. Get it while you can.
So he's been nominated before, and he lost to Jeremy Strong as Kendall Roy. He also lost to Lee Jung-jae for Squid Game, is the other one he lost for. And then he's been nominated for each season. It looks like they maybe, I don't know what happened with season. Oh, yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter. He hasn't won.
But I will say, as much as I love Brian Cox and Jeremy Strong, and I very obviously do, I was so taken with Kieran Culkin in season four that I truly, truly hope, and I don't know who's like nominated for the entire category and everything, but in terms of
I just want to say that there was no acting noms for season one, so but every single season since, and so he lost to Kendall for season two, and he lost to Squid Game in season two, season three. The other nominees here are Jeff Bridges, the titular old man, Bob Odenkirk for Better Call Saul, and Pedro Pascal for The Last of Us.
Okay. So I love Pedro Pascal and The Last of Us. And, I just think Kieran Culkin blew me away this season. He was like a standout for me as someone who just showed such emotional range and vulnerability in his role. I was so taken aback by him. I mean, obviously, I feel like Jeremy Strong is incredible. We already know that, right? Like, dramaturgically, he's, like, fantastic. But I do just want Kieran Culkin to win because I just think he's so absolutely outstanding.
If it helps at all, sorry a minute, they get nominated, you submit an episode, and obviously the voters like do not need to take that in consideration. But if you imagine that like they do take their job extremely seriously, like I'm only judging on this one episode.
Yeah.
Brian Cox gets nominated for Rehearsal, which is the one where they go.
That's to the karaoke bar.
You're not serious people.
Yeah. Kieran Culkin gets nominated for Church and State, which is his meltdown eulogy.
Yeah.
And Jeremy Strong is nominated for With Open Eyes, which is the finale. So those are the three episodes in which, like, if you're taking them literally at like they're only going to judge them based on that one episode they've been nominated for.
I mean, it's not about. It's like, on the one hand, it's great to be in a show with like so many brilliant acting performances, but on the other hand, it's like so unfair.
The piece is too whether or not they'll like, you know, lose each other's, but like they'll vote for each, like I don't really think that will happen, but like, does Pedro Pascal win because like all the Succession people split?
Oh, they split votes. That's a great conundrum question. But I think that they're all great. I think that Kieran Culkin is brilliant, and this is like got to be like the role he was born to play. Like I can't imagine a single person like being able to embody this character in quite this way and bring out so many facets of it. I'm just such a Jeremy Strong girly. I mean, he gets me every time. Like just when I think that like, oh, I've seen, you know, like it's just, there's a way that every single scene he just plays the heck out of it. He like makes you feel so much. His range, his ability to be completely douchey and off-putting and then be just like so sympathetic and endearing and heartbreaking from one scene to the next. I think that it's really like that. That role is so crucial to the whole success of the show, like having that Kendall Roy character at the center. And the ending ends up being, I think, really his ending of the show as well. So I hate to just like be like a basic B here, but I am like, I love Kendall. I love Jeremy Strong. I think that this is like the role of his life.
I'm with you. I think that he has it. I think it's really hard for me to
see. He probably will. I just can't help but shout Kieran Culkin because I just think
he definitely deserves the shout out.
He deserves his flowers. Yeah. But Sarah Snook also, like all the kids, Connor's there too. Are represented in the Emmys
counts for double because of her
team. She does count for double. She's nominated for lead actress for Tailgate Party, which is the shouting match between her and her the and Tom balcony, on the balcony scene, which is incredible. Yeah. And again, like I will say that. The acting in Connor's Wedding in episode 3, the Logan Death episode, Sarah Snook is the one who, like, I think it was a combo of Kieran Culkin and Sarah Snook that like finally was like broke me, was her just saying, no, I can't have that, when she finds out that her dad is dead. It was like just so tragic and awful and incredible, and it was everything. And so like I'm pulling for her as well. Like they're all
Who was she up against, Grace?
Yeah, so I think she has a bit of an easier path if it were Sharon Hogan for Bad Sisters, Melanie Lynskey for Yellow Jackets, Elizabeth Moss for The Handmaid's Tale, Bella Ramsey, I think, counts a shot for The Last of Us, Carrie Russell for The Diplomat. But I certainly think that this could be Sarah.
I think that she might be the favorite in this category.
Yeah. Yeah. Shouts to Bella Ramsey though, because they were incredible in the last year. Just good. Like absolutely outstanding.
So a bunch of supporting too. They basically fill up the supporting actor role here with Nicholas Braun for America Decides, Matthew McFadyen for Tailgate Party, Alan Ruck for Rehearsal, and Alexander Skarsgård for Kill List.
Wow.
Yeah, a full horse race from Succession here.
Wow. Oh my goodness. I mean, I think that Matthew McFadyen is one of the standout performances in the entire show.
Amanda, do you know that there's one other show? So there's only two shows that got supporting actor nominations. Mm. Can you guess the other one?
Can I guess the other one? Oh my gosh.
I think I can guess. I think you know it. I think I know it.
No, what
you
is
know it,
it,
Amanda? It is The White Lotus.
Oh, so, wait, The White Lotus is eligible for this.
It did not move into its anthology. It moved out of its anthology placement.
And is into, in this. Yeah. Oh, wow. So,
all of those people are also going up against F. Murray Abraham, Michael Imperioli, Theo James, and Will Sharp. So there's four from each show. There's eight nominees. Mm-hmm. That's wild. One, two.
Yeah, The White Lotus, I was going to say, is the other show that, like, stacks a whole category. Like, all of the supporting actresses are...
I think that there's a chance that The White Lotus comes out of the Emmys with a ton of surprise wins. It was supremely beloved the year that it won. And everyone was like, Mike White is a genius. He's the best. And, like, I think there's a real love for that show. Another show that is... A murder mystery? A mystery show?
Yes. Yeah, so, love a mystery.
So I think actually there could be like, I think the headline, like quote me on this, like the day after the Emmys is like The White Lotus, you know, usurps Succession and like, I think in a few categories. So
would be, I forgot that The White Lotus was competing in this category, which is like really, I mean, when The White Lotus swept the Emmys last time, it was in the anthology category. Right. So now it's going to have, I think, a tougher, much, much tougher competition. But again, another show that was just stacked with performances. I was so excited for the Emmys and then they got pulled out from under me. And now I can get all giddy again about my about my baby little shows competing here. But I think that Matthew McFadyen is going to be my favorite in the supporting actor.
Yeah.
Category. Not only does Tom have a huge season here, I think that like there's so many juicy scenes where Tom and Shiv, I really think that this was like in a big part of the success of season four is how deep the show went into the Tom and Shiv relationship. At one point, Jesse Armstrong even said that he thinks that that's the heart and soul of the show. Right. So I think that that he did incredible work throughout all of that. So that's where my favorite is. I feel like the Nicholas Braun was, you know, he always delivers, but I don't think that we saw anything new.
It was by far his weakest season, in my opinion. I think like he didn't have as much of a storyline, and I felt like it was his weakest season, whereas I do think this was probably Matthew McFadden's strongest season. Mm-hmm. Definitely, as you said, Amanda, hinging on him and Shiv and their relationship, and just the quiet moments between them when they had this big fight, and then they're laying on the bed and they're just holding hands saying, you know, well, we gave it a shot, you know, like it's the quiet acting is almost more impressive, mm-hmm. because you have to fill those silences, you know, you're not speaking at all. And I don't know. Quiet acting. And then the loud acting on the balcony too was impressive. So
do you know what I would say if Alexander Skarsgård wins though?
What would you say?
Crazy.
I mean, I want to say Alexander Skarsgård is Lucas Madsen is also like perfection. I think he's great in that role.
You love him walking backwards.
I love him walking backwards. I want to use that. That's one of my favorite gifts. That was another fun thing about the week to week Succession watching. I was like, ooh, what's my new reaction gift?
My new gift of the week.
Yes, I love him. I just think that ultimately, like, that role has less heavy lifting to do than Tom does as a character, but like,
but if the votes don't come in, then he can just say the numbers are gay. So it's
he's like, well, if you know, maybe if there's two Indias, he'll have the numbers.
Perfect.
That's right. All right, J. Smith Cameron, Jerry Kelman, the only you could definitely see there's a bit of a gender divide here on the show Succession, maybe a criticism of the show, but alas, up against some White Lotus folks, Elizabeth Debicki in The Crown, who I actually, this is tough. The other person is Rhea Seehorn for Better Call Saul.
I know that people are really looking for her to get her due.
We have to, right? Like, we have to root for Rhea Seehorn. Like, there's no question about
or
it.
Or we could root for Jennifer Coolidge.
The gays are trying to murder me. But J. Smith Cameron deserves it for her hat in Connor's Wedding alone. Just
best, you know, hat category.
Certainly, if I have a critique of the end of the show, is I do think J. Smith Cameron does not get quite what I think she deserves in terms of the character ending for Jerry Kelman. She basically she gets the lawsuit, but there's not a ton of, like, you know, like, she's, you know, her scenes with Roman early on are so captivating that, like, she never really gets that. And she sort of is, like, around at the end, but she's not a central figure. It's certainly one of the critiques I would have.
It's a relatively weak season for Jerry's character, for sure.
Yeah, I would agree.
The only other nom in the Oscars is Jesse Armstrong is nominated for writing for Connor's Wedding. So,
which, give it to
me. Connor's Wedding, maybe the best episode of the season. I mean, what do we think?
Connor might get to an Emmy.
I do want to say, like, honestly, Alan Ruck is great. He's the other one that's nominated. I don't know if he's gonna win. He's like, he has said very disparaging things about his own acting in comparison to his fellow castmates, which is hard to hear because I think he does such a wonderful job in this, and I'm like a childhood fan of him, like Ferris Bueller when I was a kid, and the character of Cameron. Like, I will always have a soft spot in my heart for Alan Ruck. He also had some great I saw some great interviews of him on the picket lines during the strike, which I loved. So I'm a big
more Alan interesting Ruck headlines fan. Recently, I think he must have been fully in Connor character when you see that he crashed a truck into a building. He's okay, but there's a damage, so that he is being litigated against, so it's not great.
He has a lot of succession money, I guess.
If he needs a clinical neuropsychologist, call me, Alan.
He crashed into a pizza shop, so
Connor's Wedding. What do we think? What's the best episode of the season?
Oh, hands down for me, it's Connor's Wedding. From the directing to the, like, anticipation. I felt like I was holding my breath the entire episode. The way the each character reacted to hearing the news, it was brilliant from start to finish. I've only seen it a few times because it's really difficult to watch. It's like the best of times and the worst of times, you know? But hands down, yeah. And something that we need to mention because I cannot in good conscience not mention it on the Succession podcast. Nicholas Britell, like, just he's a game changer for me in terms of scoring a television series. There is so much emotional impact from his score specifically. 10 out of 10. Like, I don't know that you get any better than what he does on the show.
Well, The White Lotus also has a pretty good score. That'll be another difficult battle. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough battle. But like, I just think Succession is not what it is without that score underlining every scene. You know, it's so good.
Do you ever skip the intro on your
Not anymore. I've learned my lesson. Listen, sometimes I was too, you know, I'm jonesing for Succession. I can't wait the 2 minutes, you know, it's a long intro and I can't wait. But now I listen to it because I'm in no rush.
Husband listens to the score around the house. Like, that's his, like, you know, like, doing the dishes music it's often on in our house. Mark Mylod's directing in Connor's Wedding, also incredible. That long unbroken shot that really, like, pulls you into the action with the characters is brilliant. That's what is submitted for the directing category, Grace, for the Emmys.
I believe there's three that are submitted for directing. That's what he got submitted for writing. I believe it's Living Plus, Connor's Wedding, and something else that's directing. I'll have to look it up. I would agree. I think Rehearsal to me comes close.
The karaoke scene is like a standout
stuff
scene.
So good. But I also love them at the bar, like all the bar stuff. And I know it's not like the level to the seriousness of it, but it's very good. All of the, like, he's tracking.
Put Willa's dad up on the screen. Getting a good American beer, like a Hefeweizen.
And then Church and State, I think, is the other one where it's the funeral. And I think that just has so much going on. It's the penultimate episode of the series. I think that is so good. You get this, like, James Cromwell. He's, I believe, nominated for a Golden Globe, but not for an Emmy. James Cromwell in supporting, as well as the supporting is much more. What's his name? Stewie is also nominated for
Golden Globe. Oh, nice. Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
So I think that those are probably, for me, the, like, trifecta of season 4, which is Rehearsal, Connor's Wedding, Church and State.
Yeah, Church and State is incredible. The writing in Church and State, like, really just knocks my socks off. Like, I definitely feel like the speeches at Logan's funeral, I felt like I was watching, like, Shakespeare. I mean, it's just the level of that writing and the brilliance of it and the way that it, you know, draws on what we know from the characters. And it's like, the one of the things about Succession's writing is that, you know, they don't talk like normal people talk.
I was actually going to point out there's a line from Church and State that I'm surprised, which is that Kendall goes to Hugo to list his service. He says woof woof. It's from Church and State. So you're right. They do not
brilliant
talk
writing.
Like,
yes, and that's when I said Shakespeare. But no, I mean, it's they don't talk like normal people talk. Yeah. They talk better. They use beautiful words, and I feel like that's a type of writing. And it's, you know, Jesse Armstrong being British and coming from, like, a different tradition, like, it's refreshing to see that, because I do feel like so much of what, like, you know, in television and film we do now is more true to life. But to actually see people have beautiful words in their mouths, and, like, it's an absolute delight. So Church and State was one of my highlights from the season 2. Mm-hmm. I also have America Decides on my top 3 list, which I know is a controversial,
it's polarizing thing. I think a lot of people love it.
Yeah. So it's tough. I think it's one of those ones that's so difficult to watch. And that's probably why I certainly have it up there in terms of, it's an incredible episode of television. it's also so tricky to watch it and feel good about having watched it, I guess. Because yeah, I agree with you. I think I put, I mean, I have certainly Connor's Wedding way up there. Rehearsal is really good. And I honestly would put With Eyes Open up there as well. Like it is, to me, it was such a fantastic finale. And one of the reasons for that, which is very similar in my opinion to the rehearsal, is when you get all of the Roy children in one location acting together. And so it, similarly with the karaoke scene in the finale, minus Connor, everyone is in Barbados.
Yeah.
And we have these like that amazing, amazing kitchen scene with the Roy kids.
Oh yeah.
And that to me was like, it was so incredible because first of all, we found out after the fact that that was like the last thing they shot, which also gave it this kind of like youthful, like light feeling of everyone just enjoying themselves. You know, we have
Sarah the meal fit for the king.
Repeatedly just spitting in a smoothie.
Peter's cheese.
Not allowed to have Peter's cheese. That is my favorite. If you're a patron of Pusher Recaps, one of my all-time favorite emojis is Roman licking the cheese. It's just, it's a very chef's kiss is what it gives.
Is With Open Eyes, do they go from that to them all? They go to the, like every, like Connor is like, has the dots to give away all the stuff, right? In the apartment. Is that right? And they watched the video of Logan's last dinner. I love that. I actually love that one more than I love the Barbados family.
Or that might be, is that not Church and State where that happens because it's after his funeral? I'm not sure. It might be the finale.
I think it's the finale. I think they go because the reason why I think it's that is because I believe that's where Tom tells Shiv that he knows he's going to be the CEO.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
They leave from the apartment to go fix it. I just love it. So I love that stuff. So that scene so much, the way they're all like, when like Connor reveals that like he actually already placed his dots, like that he's not doing and like, but they laugh at it. And I'm like, oh, that's how their relationship should work. That they should all know, like to be honest and truthful with each other. And then to watch, I found that so tragic because
the way it evolves. Yeah.
Well, but they're also watching, their father's last moment and they are smiling and happy because their father's happy, but he did not invite any of them to that thing. So they're watching this like a time in their life where their father is happy, but it's not involve any of them. And in fact, it involves like all, and then it's like Logan's, it's the son that he doesn't really have any trust in. And then it's like all of his like goonies from work, Carl and Frank and Jerry and Carolyn. And what a sad, like it's, I just think that like the writing at the end is
I mean, the truth is like in every single episode of season four, there is an outstanding scene like the Munsters when Logan goes out to the diner with Colin. That scene is incredible. We talked about the karaoke scene, that Barbados scene is like amazing in the finale. Like there's the balcony scene in Tailgate Party. Like every,
it's funny when I was thinking about the nominations and you look at the episode and you're like, oh, it's because like he breaks down at the funeral. Oh, it's because they yell at each other on the balcony. Like there's these scenes that like are so evocative and they're like live in my brain, Amanda. You're right.
I mean, even if we say this was a better episode than this one, like every single episode like had one of those scenes that just left with like, I was like, wow, that's incredible. That's one of the best scenes of television I've seen in my life. And so, I mean, what a triumph of a final season, like really incredible. We're never going to get to see new content with any of the Roys again. How are you doing with that, Jess?
It honestly is a little painful, but I always have my rewatches, you know, and now I have the script books, so I can watch with new eyes. Like I've watched a few episodes with like having the script book out. I literally have like a highlighter and pen. I'm such a loser. It's fine.
No,
and I like watch with them and it's so fascinating to see what they changed, what they cut, what they moved in terms of the order of the episode. Ooh. Like it's so fascinating to watch how they moved things around and to kind of judge like, oh, did they run out of time? Or, you know what I mean? Sometimes Jesse Armstrong has little footnotes in there. So it is really interesting to watch it with new eyes from that perspective. But of course, I miss it terribly. I honestly, it is my Roman Empire.
They better not be Greg's footnotes. He has disgusting little feet.
What is it? Sales out, nails out, Grace.
Oh, yeah.
Which, by the way, I've watched a lot of Below Deck now. And so now I understand that it is commonplace to not wear shoes on a yacht. And I thought that they were just trolling Greg all these years. Yeah. But yeah. Should we hang out some superlatives before we get out of here?
Let's
Sure. Let's do
it. All right. Grace, we have an MVP. Do you have an MVP for season four?
I do feel to a degree we said like, who do we think is going to win the Emmys? And so we've done, and we sort of had favorite episodes. So I don't know how long this needs to be, but I don't think there's anybody who deserves it more than Kendall. I think there's an argument to be made for Roman or Shiv. I think
He's the eldest boy, so you know,
maybe Tom. But I do think, I think to Amanda's point earlier about why Jeremy Strong in particular should win the Emmy for Outstanding Lead Actor, I just can't. Nobody. It's such a unique performance. He's on for me like potentially the pantheon of like interesting TV characters. Like he's so phenomenal in the way he can make his face look happy or awkward or whatever. It's so good. It's such a tremendous performance. I don't think I can give it to anybody. And he is the person who, yeah, as you said, Amanda, we end the show on him. He gets the final shot. For me, the MVP has to be Kendall Roy.
Yeah. The other option for me, if I was going to look a little bit more at like the machinations of the plot and like who is most responsible for us ending up where we are, I'm going to give this to Shiv, and she's also going to get the backwards and heels points for this. But in this season, she has a pregnancy. Her marriage is falling apart. She also is the one who ends up being responsible in changing the succession plan, like directly changing the outcome and taking it from her brother and giving it to her husband. So I'm going to give this, like, you know, I could say that Kendall is MVP of seasons 1 through 3, and I'm going to give this one to Shiv.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the third Roy child that hasn't been mentioned.
Connor.
No, it has to be Roman for me. Mm. And Kieran Culkin is, I thought, a masterful performance this season. Him having this like screaming match at the top of the mountain is so interesting, and him having the breakdown, giving the eulogy, like I just felt like I was most intrigued to see his reaction to Logan's death. I think his relationship with Logan fascinates me, not necessarily more than the others, but like I'm always interested to see what his reaction will be, because he seems to be the one who, you know, we get in at the end of season, oh my gosh, my mind is all blurring together. End of season 2, we get the like, what are you going to give me? And I come to you with love. And he's like, love? Like he's disgusted. But
the thing for me, the most resonant thing is like, actually it's Carolyn who says like, he wants to hit the dog and see if it will come back. And Roman is the best example of that. Who like in the last season, he's the one texting him and visiting him in secret at night. Yep. Like he can't help but go back to his father. And he's maybe the most hurt by him, at least like physically. You know?
Yeah. And he's the one who was the dog when they play that game as kids and they lock him in the crate. Right. Like, and oh, you went involuntarily. Like Roman is such a fascinating character. And I felt like season 4, they really knocked it out of the park, both in terms of writing and Kieran Culkin's performance. So I have to give it to him. I thought he was so incredible. Jeremy Strong, obviously, like, they're all great. Like I can't, you know what I mean? They're all absolutely fantastic. So just know that I love them all, but I will choose Kieran Culkin for this, or Roman Roy for this. Mm-hmm.
Amanda, you're the only one with children on this podcast. It's just like when you love one of your children more than the other ones.
Yeah, I mean, we all. Yeah, I love them equally, but they know which one.
I'm just kidding, of course.
Dr. Amanda's succession coming to Puerto Rico in 2024.
Who's going to take over my podcasting life?
Oh my gosh. All right. So, what about LVP, Amanda? What do you have for LVP?
All right, I'm thinking about this. I mean, I think the direction I want to go is like whose stock plummeted the most in season 4 of Succession. And I also want to get Grace to say this name again so that our commenters can tell her that she's mispronouncing it. But I think Carrie's stock. I think that Carrie's stock portrayed by the great Zoe Winters probably drops the most in season four of Succession. So like to be, I think just like sort of taking this as literally, like, I don't want to say that any of the actors like did a bad job or any of the characters sucked. I think everybody like served their purpose. Of course we said that like Jerry was like a little bit underserved this season. But you know, Carrie was, I think, the loser of losers with Logan's death.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, she does have a cool brother though.
She's a very cool
with the
brother.
Long hair, yeah.
She has a great, great audition tape.
One person who it's actually astonishing how little we talked about him, considering what an absolute sensation he was in the early goings of the show. And so I don't think that I can give this point to anybody other than one Greg. Nobody, was the absolute like favorite, and the way that this show, almost Breaking Bad-ish, but not quite that, because I don't know that he was ever good. I mean, I kept going back, like in the first episode, he tries to get his uncle Ewan's board seat. That's the first move he makes in the history of the show. So I don't know that he was ever a good guy, but the way that people fell in love with him and thought he was a doofus, only to realize he's just as bad as the rest of them, is I think to me, like, maybe that's not like the point of the LVP thing, but the fact that we like
what the point is,
because I think it's a really great story. I think it's a really interesting story. It kind of comes at the expense of like Nicholas Braun, who was like, as I said, like a sensation early on, like the Greg and Tom of the show. And it was still there in the final season. Like there's the whole bag thing. There's
ludicrously
so
capacious bag, which they
do you own one yet, Jess? Do you own a ludicrous?
I want one so badly.
It's a bag.
Do you know, somebody get this. The holidays are coming up. Get this for Jess.
Do you know how many times I've been on Etsy? And sometimes I'm just hanging out and I'll go on Etsy and I'll type in the word Succession just to see if there's anything new. There are so many tote bags that are labeled as like ludicrously capacious bag. And it has like the entire quote on it. I do not have one yet. Although my husband did just get me a crap bag tote. Which is a Friends reference, and I absolutely adore it. So I do have a crap bag. I don't have a ludicrously capacious bag.
So there's some great moments, and actually, Kari says it to pull me apart like string cheese. And so there are moments that are great, but I do just think like I don't think anybody's stock actually for me did drop lower than Greg. We barely mentioned him this episode. So. He's not nominated.
Yep. So, no, he is. He's nominated. He is nominated.
Well, look, but I forgot he was nominated.
But I do agree with you, Grace. I also have Greg as my LVP. And even though he did have moments, like we're saying, none of these people actually are like terrible or bad actors or anything like that. It's more of just like the Greg stuff wasn't there this season. No one was ranting and raving about Greg the way we were early on in the series.
There was that one guy who got wasabi in his eye. He was ranting and raving about
Greg.
Maybe not raving. He's definitely ranting about Greg.
I mean, he did put lemon seltzer in that man's eyes. But yeah, I just don't think he had as much Greginess happening. You know, he gets the little Greglet lines and he gets the disgusting brothers. But he certainly, I think everyone kind of turned on him this season because, you know, we were a little blissfully ignorant, or at least we chose not to look directly. Everyone else was, you know, relatively so awful compared to Greg that other people, we just kind of chose to be like, but he's the good one. But like, they're all bad, you know, and he just really showed his bad, bad side this season.
Season three is one of my favorite lines in the history of the show, is when Tom goes to him and he's like, you want to sell your soul? And he's like, soul anyway. You want to make a deal with the devil? Who needs a soul anyway? It's like my favorite. And like, it's basically like, oh, where'd all that go? Like, it's like, wasn't as big of a factor in the final season. Thought he could.
So yeah, he is also my LVP, even though, again, I have much love for early seasons, Greg. And obviously to a certain degree, season four, Greg, but we kind of already mentioned it. Favorite episode for me, it's a very easy Connor's wedding. It is one of the most impressive episodes of television I've ever seen.
Can I turn this around? Cause we did it. And then I feel like we were like, but there's so many good scenes in the show. So now if we put you to the test and you actually do have to pick a scene from season four, I feel like that's more intriguing because I think we gave the gambit away.
Oh my gosh. Favorite scene.
But if you then pick a scene, I think karaoke is so good. It's the last moment that they're all together. So it gets that boost of like, now we know that's the last thing he ever said to them. It's so good. It has the best Connor line, maybe like.
Your needy love sponges.
Yeah. As like an action, like that's like not a funny line. Cause I am drawn to the funny lines and Connor has many of those, but in terms of like a dramatic moment, it's so good from him. I really like that scene. I really like the watching Logan, the Logan dinner video, but I think I'll stick from season four. I think probably my favorite moment is karaoke.
Okay. Amanda, do you have one top of mind? Cause if not, I can go.
Well, I have one. I mean, karaoke is one of the best scenes. The balcony fight is one of the best scenes, but I'm going to go a little bit off of the board that we haven't talked about because I love this scene.
You have the votes for that to go off the board?
I think so. I'm sorry. I'm calling in the conference call in for this. But I'm going to go off the board a little bit with this one too, a scene that I want to give some flowers to. And I remember my feeling watching this episode. Kendall's pitch in Living Plus, felt fully electrified watching him nail that pitch and everything that was happening there. I'm just such a Kendall girly. And like, I love the moments where you get a glimmer of like, oh my gosh, he could actually be good at this. And like, that just felt like it was setting up for such a disaster. And I just felt electrified by the scene of seeing him actually pull it off. So I'm going to give the Living Plus pitch as one of my favorite scenes.
He's not in the bomber jacket, right? They don't do the bomber jackets.
He does do the bomber jacket.
He does.
Yeah. Roman he commits. Roman commits out.
Yeah.
Big shoes.
Oh gosh, so embarrassing. I can't. The secondhand cringe. I just can't. I'm gonna go with one I briefly mentioned, but it is in the finale, and it is the scene in Barbados, the meal fit for a king. I love all three, the three younger Roy children. I love seeing their dynamic. I think they're absolutely fascinating. And there was such joy in that scene. It made me feel a little bit light. And like Succession does not do that. It's so rare that it does that. And I was so thankful that in a series finale that does have a darker ending and does have a darker tinge to it, that we got a moment of levity, that we got that like siblings being siblings and they're getting along and they've made an agreement. You know, they finally made an agreement that they will let Kendall be the successor. They will let him win. You know, there was something so lovely about that scene, and you could just sense the actors like relief, not like relief that it was over, but like they're joyous as well. It was so wonderful. So I have to shout out that scene just because I remember enjoying it so, and it's so funny too, you know, just knowing that Jeremy Strong is a method actor and drank like a gallon of Sarah Snook's spit is just incredible.
I mean, I've said this before, but like this is one of the shows where like I think as viewers you really like crave for these people to have connection and to be happy and to have these moments, and the show gives you so little along those lines, and when we get those moments you just like soak it up, and it feels like such a triumph. And knowing that this was also the culmination of those three actors and how close they've become working on this show, it really is like a beautiful, tremendous scene.
I think there's some others I want to highlight. I feel like we're obviously not going to be able to get as many as we want. There's so many good scenes, but if people could, you know, send us a message on Twitter or send us in the Discord, like what are your favorite scenes? But I think the ending of episode one, I actually maybe for me personally like it more than the balcony moment where Tom does want to talk about it and she does not want to talk about it. So they just sit there and the music is so slow. It's the theme song, but slowed down is so good.
And the Colin and Logan Logan's, I mean, like that scene with Logan and Colin at the diner when he talks about what is a man? He's an economic unit. I mean, like, oh my goodness. Like what an incredible Logan scene that is.
Agreed. One we haven't talked about is obviously when they find out that Logan died and they all process it over the phone and they're listening. They actually don't know that he's dead. They're like listening in all the way up to the moment where Connor's like, oh, he hated me. It's like, oh God, it's like that.
It was so whole brutal. Stretch
is brutal. But like, so it's so effective. There's so much from the show. So.
Yeah. I mean, the eulogy, I think the eulogy moment of we get Roman kind of breaking down. We also get Ewan's like absolutely incredible speech. So that stands out. I think a lot of the stuff with Shiv's pregnancy also stands out to me. Like the moment when she does finally tell Tom is massive, and there obviously the balcony fight
is that
well.
True There's... isn't that what he says is that
yeah
true?
Yeah it's true. Oh, it's like so painful to think about even now, just like the idea of someone saying that. Oh, and the other one I was thinking too is in the final episode when Shiv, Roman and Kendall are all arguing and fighting in the like with all the glass around them and everyone seeing it, it is so well done, and again feels like the opposite of what I was saying with the Barbados.
Is that the I am the eldest boy?
There's the like.
What does he say?
There's the call when they're gonna call, when they call. Who's the guy that they hire? Who's their like rep from episode when they're gonna do?
Oh, Telly or Telly.
Yeah. Whatever.
Oh, yeah, Telly.
Telly.
Yeah.
That's that. And then I think what you're referencing is like where like Roman is literally sitting on the tape, like he's like sitting right, and he's like he's decided that he's not gonna he's gonna join Shiv
in the finale. Yeah.
Yeah. There's also in America Decides, the one where like. Greg passes the information, and so they're in the boardroom and they're walking, and you're just seeing people like.
If you give us enough time, we're gonna name.
We'll just name the whole series. listen. If you're looking for the best scene in season four, just watch all of season four again. You know, like it's all the best. It's all
probably
the best
way to do it.
Wait, one more. The scene where they are reading the newspaper headlines that are like coloring Logan in like a very bright light, and they're like rephrasing them to be what they actually mean.
Yeah,
I really liked, because again, the best thing about the show, one of my favorite things about Succession, is how well it weaves together comedy and drama and like comedy and tragedy. And that is so funny. I love the dark humor there. It is so hysterical because it is exactly something my family would do, is like read the headline and be like, what they meant was this. Anything else we want to say? I mean, I could talk for hours about Succession, but anything else we want to say today on this podcast about Succession before we wrap things
up? I mean, thank you, Succession, for the best television viewing of 2023. We had like, you know, this was a year of highs and lows in terms of television, and this was definitely a high. And I want to say, like, so fun to talk to both of you again about Succession. Podcasting about Succession is like ultimate, like one of the best podcasting experiences. It's as good as it possibly gets. Like, I'm not only like revisiting these episodes, but also revisiting the conversations that we had around these episodes and all of that. And it's just, I just feel so lucky to get to talk to smart, funny people about television. And I'm so lucky that anybody has ever listened to me do that. Like, it's really amazing. And like, so everybody who's been part of the community, if you've been interacting with us, like on social media or not, it's like, this is one of the gifts that I think like is really makes all of this podcasting stuff great to be a part of.
I totally agree. Right back at you. Like, it's been so fun. Yeah.
Yeah. This has been an absolute dream. Like, mission accomplished, life goals completed, talk about Succession on podcasts repeatedly that somehow people listen to for some reason.
I have lots of other life goals.
Other life goals. Like I'm done. That's
like a lot of them. Yeah.
That's it. No, I'm done. Okay. But this has been incredible. I love Succession. I will never stop recommending that people check it out. And we appreciate you listening. Of course, before
we close out. Wouldn't it be hilarious if like Jess like ripped off the mask and was like, actually, I hate Succession. I've never liked it.
Well, I was hoping she would be like, it was like she's Brian Cox or something. It's like,
she's been Brian Cox all
the whole time.
Yeah, I've been in the F off and the whole time. Before we close out, of course, we have to remind you one last time, our audience survey is at PosherRecaps.com/survey2023. Every response is greatly appreciated and it will help make Posher Recaps the best it can be. The more, listen, I'm not a mathematician, but the more data you have, the more accurate results are. I know that much. So send in your lists. PosherRecaps.com/survey2023. And yeah, what about Grace? What do you have? What do you have going on? I know you have a lot.
Well, man, I'm talking about The Curse, which I think might be the best show airing on television at the moment. Although it's in competition, I think, with Fargo, which I'm also chatting about with Mike Bloom and Latoya. Yellowstone will come back for some free cover that in quick succession, pun fully intended. And then movies with Aaron really tweak, and yes, you and I watch a different TV show every week and talk about on full spoiler recaps. This week, depending on when this comes out, we recently will have talked about The Travelers, which was just so good. It's about starring in a show about the Lavender Scare and the Red Scare of the 1950s America, and it's tremendously good and sad and, you know, dramatic, and it's great. So check it out and then listen to our coverage of it as well. I'm on social media at Hi From Grace. Yeah, sorry.
What about you, Amanda? You're also revisiting a classic HBO show.
I am. Speaking of the pantheon of great HBO shows, Ariel and I are covering 6 Feet Under season one, which has recently arrived on Netflix as of November of this year. So you can binge that now if it's been on your list and catch up with all of that. With Ariel and I, we've been covering 2 episodes a week, and we are just about to release our finale coverage of season one. And I can tease that there might be more 6 Feet Under coverage in your future if you've been enjoying that. So definitely check that out. And I'll echo what Grace said about The Curse being tremendous television. So definitely worth checking out. And as always, I will post everything that I'm up to on Twitter, where you can find me at Dr. Amanda R. And how about you, Jess?
Incredible. You could find me at The Jess Sterling. As Grace said, we're doing full spoiler recap. So really check out Fellow Travelers. I've not really heard anybody talking about it, and I think it's a show that's like so worthy of a discussion. So definitely check that out and check out our podcast coverage on it, because I can't stop thinking about it. It is one that I like was I watched 7 episodes before the 8th episode dropped, and I was like, but I need the finale now. I need it now. It's so good. Yeah. So definitely check that out. Otherwise, you could hear my voice on Shit 90 Shows Taught Me with Sarah Ferguson. We're covering Felicity, where every single week Felicity one-ups herself in terms of just the nonsense that she does and like how she exists as a human being on this planet doing the things she does. We also put out some Christmas content. We watched Jack Frost. Not as sad as I remembered, more ridiculous than I remembered. So check that out. And we also covered I'll Be Home for Christmas, which will be coming out on Christmas Day. And we also have an announcement at the end of that podcast for some teasers for some future coverage for us over there as well. So At Shinani's Pod is where you can find us. At DJ Sterling is where you can find me. Oh, and I've been streaming on Twitch again. I've been playing Disco Elysium. Yeah. That game is wild. I died in the first 20 minutes somehow. It's very fun. Check it out twitch.tv/JessSterling. That's gonna do it for us though on the 2023 in review podcast. Don't forget to subscribe PosherRecaps.com/2023 in review, as we're gonna be covering stuff all through December. So until next time, everybody, and maybe for the last time ever, who knows, F off.